You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We're looking upward. We're looking into the sky. We're looking at the sun. We're looking at the clouds, the rain, whichever you've got going, snow, sleet. It's all here. It's all in front of you. This is an amazing time. Every time is an amazing time. Every time is a troubled time. We have all kinds of issues going on all over the place. What's right? What's wrong? We have sometimes no idea. We want to take a side. We want to take a stand, but we don't know where to stand. How do you take a stand on moving ground? How do you take a stand on quicksand? Have you ever been in the ocean and have the surf come at you so strongly, even if you're out in the shallow part of the ocean, just right at the shoreline, and it comes at you so swiftly and so strongly, and as it comes in, it puts a force towards you forward, and yet the undercurrent has a force having you go backward, and then the sand sinks at the same time. So sometimes that grounds you a little bit, so you don't go forward or backward. But we're kind of in those times, and I cannot think of a time. I'm sure they existed, these little periods. Think of all life on the planet as a wave form. Everything's a wave. It's a wave in the voice of God. All voices are waveforms. They're all filled with frequencies. Take my voice. Don't listen to anything I say. Put it on some kind of frequency tuner machine that tells you how loud, how soft, amplification, high, low, wherever it goes on the scale of all the different frequencies. And you'll get to see it's a waveform. God's voice is a waveform. The ups, the downs, the glaciers, the dinosaur age, the oceans, the deserts, it's waveform. Global freezing, global warming, global flooding, global fire, global getting hit by asteroids, global stuck in around a sun. It's all a wave form. And it really, when it all comes down to it, there's not anything man of himself will do to our world. What we can do, because the two are not mutually exclusive. If you care for and to and love, not because you're so awesome that you as a benevolent creature look down on the earth and say, I will be your guardian. No, God wants you to learn from the earth. He wants to be part of the earth. He wants your feet in the ground. He wants you to beware of scorpion stings because you can die from them, or rattlesnakes or anything else. But he wants you to learn from them. You can do things that'll cause the beautiful hummingbird to fall out of the tree. I even had that happen many years ago in a very nice place I lived in a different state, where we were out walking and we just kept noticing these little dead birds on the sidewalk. And one day we noticed a bird that was seizing. So I took the bird and I called a vet and I called the zoo and whoever, there were people around that took care of birds. And what happened is that the Chemlawn, or the chemicals sprayed on the area, on the grasses and on the common areas or along the sidewalks, I think it was actually a public street. They're just pear trees, I think, or something, non-fruiting, fruit-bearing pear trees. And, or Bradford pear, I think they were. And what I was told by the bird expert was that the trees get sprayed, the bugs eat the leaves or do whatever they do, the birds eat the bugs, and because it's a neurotoxin, the birds then go into seizures. Their neurology gets all messed up. And we tend to be so short-sighted. So when I'm, what I'm saying about that, why I'm bringing that even up, is that we get messed up on what we think are caretakers, guardians, tenders, what it means to love the earth or be in dominion over the earth. I don't know. We're told too many times in the Bible and in other faith-based faith traditions and cultural traditions throughout millennia that we are with the with nature. We're with them in the way that nature needs to be respected. We don't go out and swim with the walruses because we think we're all so awesome and we're all part of nature, because we don't understand nature, because part of nature is that sharks come up and eat the weakest link of the pod of, I don't know if they're called pods, whales are called pods, but of the walrus harem. And so as happened, sadly, but possibly predictably, someone who went out all the time, oh, I'm one with nature, went out all the time swimming with these, I think it was seals or sea lions or walruses, one of the those kind of mammals. And I don't mean to offend any mammals out there, but I don't know exactly which one she was swimming with. I think it was sea lions. And one day, after doing this for several years, a shark just happened to be going by at that time and literally ate her. Because while thinking she was one with nature or whatever she felt inside of her, and again, we all have accidents, so I'm not really judging her. We could just as easily do it when we go and accidentally step on a stingray buried in the sand. But the fact is that nature did what nature did. That's why we need to respect nature. We need to learn from nature. We need to be part of nature, meaning we have to also be our own. In doing that, you would not want to harm it or use it or abuse it, and you'd want to partake in it. So you wouldn't, and you would just by default not do toxic things to the environment. So when we look at who we are, when we look at what we do, when we look at where we're going as a nation and as a country and as a nation and as a globe, it is really, I think we're coming into the time of contemplation, but not self-awareness, but self-awareness with a greater than ourselves, a being greater than ourselves, and also at the same time with our earthly nature. And in doing that, as we are progressing toward Advent very soon, in just several days, we're going to start the first day of Advent. I want to look at the earthly Mary. I want to take Mary out of the Hallmark card. I am always enraptured with just about every depiction of Mary I've ever seen, especially the older the better, because they're just so full, and the colors are so amazing, and the details and the little symbology all over, from whether it's the Renaissance era, the Middle Age era, or maybe it's way back in the Byzantine. To me, I just find those very beautiful. Sometimes seeing, or whether it was Guadalupe, I think they're very beautiful. I love them. But we have to take her out of Hallmark. I still love those too. I love this beautiful, demure, not so much demure, but the ever beautiful, the ever soft Mary after she ascended into heaven, and all the various ways she has appeared all throughout the world. However, I want to take her out of what we paint, because that is the Hallmark. Now, let me divide this up, because I don't want anyone saying this, that I'm saying that all those things are less than. I love them. I will have them all over my house. I have them all over my house. But the perfect tool of a narcissistic mind, which our world is becoming, and our personal relationships are truly becoming. It's becoming like such a used word that it just seems like nothing now. It's like saying pass the butter. But one of the hallmarks is living through a picture, painting the picture. The picture is more important than the substance. The picture dictates the substance. We have daughters who are dictated who they are. Their substance is overlooked or not nurtured. It's the picture that's important. You're doing that to your sons. You're doing that to your daughters. It was done to you. We're doing it to a nation. Give me the picture. Give me the movie, and I will embrace it. I want to take Mary out of that for a moment, and I want to look at the girl Mary. I want to look at things that we can infer about her substance and not just her picture. Because if all we try to do is imitate the picture with the hands folded upward and the eyes cast downward and a very pious look on her face, we will not be able to emulate her as women. We will not be able to love her as men, as fully the human person she was and who she is set out for us to be like. I really believe this is the beginning of some new Marian significance, whether it's a year, whether it's a millennia, whether it's going to happen in 100 years, I don't know. But I believe that there's a need for the real Mary. We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. Now, why did I come to this? Well, I don't really know, to be honest with you. I really don't. You know what I always tell you? I always say, okay, Holy Spirit, St. Gabriel, messenger. What is it I need to talk about? What's going on? Well, you know, I have ideas in my mind. Certain things occur, and I want to talk about them. I had this not beautiful, it was a very sad article from Bioethics. It was called BioEdge, actually, the publication, and talking about the advances with assisted death and how there is. California just passed that, like with this election, more places passed the recreational use of marijuana to be legal, and also the advancement of what they're now calling assisted death. And we're losing a lot of the history of that, and it's becoming a medical thing, actually, you know, just like delivering a baby or doing a heart transplant. And it's really sad to me because it is confused. It's very confused in the world. So what they want is for people with terminal illnesses to be able to have the choice of going out if they want to go out. That's another subject. But what is happening is, as it has in the Netherlands, it gets broader. And this is getting broad fast. So there was an article I wanted to talk about, but I'm not going to because the Holy Spirit told me to go a different direction. But I will just let you know that there's a direction that's happening. And even there was some talk in California to extend that to mental hospitals, to mental illness. So that if someone is hospitalized, and if you've ever been in depression, I have. So if you've ever been in depression, or you have ever known anyone to be in depression, or you've ever known anyone who's suicidal, which I have, if you ever known anyone who's committed suicide, which I have, both professionally and personally, you know that there are those moments where you don't know what's going on in the person, and they seem fine. But they're not fine. And yet we're starting to want to open the door to people who are mentally ill. They get hospitalized for depression or for suicidal thought. And they may be at some point allowed to go ahead and commit suicide. Now, anyone can commit suicide if they want to, right? But this is going to be an assisted situation. And this is just very wrong. There's just something that, I mean, we all know as Catholics, but there's something else that is so, that is going to change the landscape of humanity, I think, as time goes on. Because this is new now. How is it going to be in 50 years? Or 100 years. We don't know. All right. So I said I wasn't going to talk about that. So I'm not going to. I'm going to talk about Mary, because I think one of the ways of counteracting what we have no control over, I have no control over this. I can't see all the little corners. I can make assumptions, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. I can say, you know what? It's a heck of a lot cheaper to give somebody $1.50 worth of drugs than it is to help them have a whole systems, have group therapies and physicians writing medications and medical workups and one-on-one counseling and supporting mental hospitals or wards with, I can see where, you know, look about the money, very, very, very different. And these are run by companies. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to talk about this, and look what I'm doing. I get very excited about these things because you can see the little nuances, but that's the same. Let's take that out now and put it into life. We get this little thing inside, that dissonant chord I talk about a lot. The dissonant chord, we get that inside. We go, oh, something's grating here. But you can't put your finger on it. And if you try to put your finger on one, you're called a liberal. Or if you put it on the other, you're called a conservative. Or you're called paranoid. Or you're called irrelevant. Or you're called many other names. Or you're just, you know, blind Christian. Or you're just blind whatever. Or you're an atheist, whatever way to dismiss the little pieces, because if enough people put the pieces together, that's how they find out in the medical world when you have an epidemic, or when you have a new disease, or when you have a real untested side effect from a medication. It's the little pieces. But if every doctor, one in France, one in Florida, USA, one in Canada, one in Mexico, then a few more, then one in Texas, and one in all over. They're putting these together, and over 20 years, there's a place to report certain side effects. Oh, gee, that patient took this medicine and this happened. I don't see it here. Wow, that patient did too. Oh, so did this one. Someone, somebody somewhere collects them, the information, because you're supposed to report them if you want to or need to, especially if they're serious. And then all of a sudden, something that was unforeseen starts to gel into a picture. But if each physician was bound and gagged and could not tell, for whatever reason, could not express the side effect that they see in the people they're giving medication to. And the one in Florida couldn't say it, the one in Texas, the one in France, the one in Mexico, the one in Russia, the one in Canada, the one in California, one in Alaska. They couldn't put it together. You'd have all these people having all kinds of side effects, and no one would know that the culprit might be a medication or a supplement or a certain modality. That happens in the real world too. And real by meaning that is the real world, but it happens in our social lives. It happens in our everyday life. It's obvious what happens, and yet everyone wants to say, no, 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 this isn't happening. This is just an isolated incident. And then 20, 30 years down the road, guess what? It's a problem. So when I talk about Mary being the earthly Mary, talking about her, we need her now. We need her now. We need our lives back. And women, you need your life back. You talk about, on the one hand, we're going to read all about Mary. We're going to read all about, I mean, we're coming into Advent, and we're going to be looking at Genesis even, and the whole concept with the serpent, and the whole concept with taking out the woman. Take her out. Take her out. And yet it seems like we're just antiquated Bible thumpers on the one hand. And on the other hand, all you got to do is open your eyes. Now, beforehand, before the break, I was talking about one of the hallmarks of a narcissist is that they love their picture more than themselves, or more than life. Their picture is all important. That's why many people are so love bombed and loved by narcissists. And yet they feel hollow, two-dimensional, like they fit in a little picture. How many of you know that? Whether it was your mother's pictures, your father's picture, your dad's, your grandparents' picture, your husband's picture, your anyone's picture. And as long as you fit there, you felt okay. But if you didn't fit there, you felt the withdrawal of love or harsh comments or humiliation or degradation. And so you go back into the picture. Well, we're kind of like that as a society, and we're kind of like that in our relationships. And it's getting more and more that way, where the empathy is going away. The picture is God Almighty. The picture is the idol. That's our false idol now, is our picture. What do you look like on the outside? And we use these words to convince me, so therefore I will do all these things. Now, I'm not downing taking advantage of our medical world and improving whatever you want to improve. I wouldn't wear makeup if I didn't think that those things are okay. However, we have to go back and say, where have we lost our substance? Where's the substance? And I want to get to the substance of Mary, the substance of womanhood, the substance of being able to get your power and be fully feminine and fully powerful and fully full of voice, like Mary was. Mary, we always say, well, of course, Mary leads to her son. Mary, we have these pictures of Mary. She's our mother, but we always have her as the fair, sweet mother, rather than the tough girl that she had to be in the society she lived in. And we get back from the break. There's a Jesuit priest who wrote about this, because I thought, oh my gosh, can I even talk about this? And then I discovered him, and I thought, awesome. So we'll get to that on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. So I was thinking a lot about women this weekend, especially, I'll tell you why. And this morning, just kind of going through, I heard a priest on a Feast of Christ the King, and I liked him a lot. He was a young priest, and he was talking about his college days and his wild days, and he talked about his father or maybe a priest he ran into saying that you should say the Apostles' Creed and the Creed and an Our Father and a Hail Mary and do this like every day for 7 days or whatever it was. And he was talking about how profound it was for him and that he ignored it at first. And so today when I did my little prayer thing and I'm thinking, okay, that's a kind of a cool thing. I'll start with that. And so I did. And I have a lot of, I'm really fond of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So I've got lots of Our Lady of Guadalupe all over the place. And so then as I'm going through and I'm thinking about the weekend and an experience I had, and I was thinking about these girls, and I'll tell you about them. And I was also thinking about another woman who is involved in a very difficult divorce with a narcissistic man. And another woman who is also, as fact, the person, the man was diagnosed, which is very rare. Usually they don't think they have a problem, but somehow this person was diagnosed specifically. And it could be very damaging because a lot of the damage is done in the inside. The love is conditional, and the love is conditional to being a reflection of them or a reflection of what you want, or a reflection of something you're trying to be. And so we have a lot of beginnings of difficulties with self-esteem, difficulties with eating disorders, difficulties with all these things. There's multiple reasons. It's not just because a parent is narcissistic or maybe is mentally ill or has a borderline personality disorder. That's not necessarily the cause. They are one of the causes, like a sore throat. There's many causes you can have, reasons you can have a sore throat. So there's not one cause. But oftentimes what we see is in the narcissistic, the true narcissistic in all of its complements, pathology, it's a character disturbance, and they do not have the ability to do it any other way. And it's not to feel bad for them and then succumb. But what happens is that what you feel is love, what the child feels, this was described back in Greek times. It's been with us forever. What the child feels as love or grows up to think as love is really just being able to fit in that picture and never know their true selves, never know their true identity, never to be allowed to know their true identity. And so what happened this weekend was sitting in and listening for other reasons to these two young girls who were singing. And they were sisters, and they were beautiful, and they had beautiful voices. But this was like a rehearsal. And the father came in, and all of a sudden you could see the dynamic. And the dynamic was such that you could see the pain and the turmoil. Because on the one hand, one of the sisters was classically very beautiful. The other one was very beautiful too, but different. And the father at one point had put all the attention on the one sister who was more traditionally beautiful. And then the other one was kind of dismissed. But the other one comes up with this voice. And the professionals had seen the beauty in both voices, had seen the beauty of both people. But you could see the father, who was very easily taken from one to the other to the other, back and forth. If one was being exalted, the other one had to be lesser. The other one was being exalted, the other one had to be lesser. The constant comparison, like little volleyballs. And so somehow that the whole dynamic opened up another window, because this was a whole different realm. It wasn't my personal life. It was not my professional life. It was a different place where it was displayed out before me. So it doesn't take, you know, if you see so many people in action, it doesn't take a lot to kind of get a, have a pretty good idea, a feel. You may not be 100% right. So I was thinking about Mary just a few minutes before the program, and I was thinking about her, and I was thinking about her and how throughout the ages, we have her like a little hollow statue. You know, the statues, those little ceramic statues where the inside is hollow. And of course, we all, I don't want to undercut anyone's devotion. I know people who are so devoted to Mary. And really, the miracles that happen through her are amazing. And they get her in their hearts, of course. But I'm talking now as a general rule. We think of her as the mother, perhaps a mother we never had, or the woman we'd like to be like. And we focus on, of course, her sorrows. We focus on her, the wedding feast at Cana. We focus on a lot of things, the fact that she said yes. But what we don't focus on is what's little known. I'm not a historian, but you have to have an idea when you hear all the other things that happen and all the other historians around that time period in the Middle East, you have kind of idea for tribal hierarchy, for patriarchy, for where women were. Women were very much in a very tight role, and they had to come with cattle or dowries or things like that. Not saying they weren't loved, but they really were more like an asset or like livestock in some respects. Some, of course, there was a family structure, and there were weddings and happinesses and things like that too. But it was very different. So we don't look at what it took for a young girl, a girl. And we can say, well, the lifespan was shorter then. Well, for some people it was, for some people it wasn't. Look how long Abraham lived and his wife. So we look at these things and say, all right, so here's this young girl. She's betrothed, as is the custom. She is Jewish. There is no Christianity. She lives in a tribal situation, as is the day. It's just what she was in, Middle East. So who could she be? And in that respect, what kind of voice could she have? You don't have a lot of historical accounts of 13-year-old betrothed girls raising their voice, questioning authority, leaving all she knew, basically saying, no, I'm going this way. So I came across, as I'm thinking, I know she's power, but the earth Mary is power. Because before she came heavenly Mary, celestial Mary, she was on earth. She was not born of a virgin. She was a girl. That was it. She was a girl. She was a chosen girl. But she was a girl. She was earthly. So what is it that she can teach us about someone who is in such a powerless situation in a time when women did not have power? They weren't the heads of their tribes. You always have the line of, and it's the man. Didn't say who you might see who they were married to. But, you know, really, which one? It's like one's, you don't have one without the other. So the line is a line that is formed by two people, but it wasn't housed that way. Women were just a necessary apparatus, I guess. And they were revered, I'm sure, and respected and et cetera. But again, if if a husband died, then the brother just had to marry the woman. That's just kind of how it worked. So if I'm historically inaccurate in as far as like how the actual family system worked, then you can correct me because I really don't know that much about that. but I wanted to think, what about this? So as I'm thinking about it and thinking, you know what, we need our lives back. Women need their lives back. We need our voices back. We need to know what femininity really is. We need not to be sold out by our own gender. We need not to be sold out by relationships and the going relationship of the day. Before I get into this Jesuit priest, I want to make a little side journey. We only have a couple minutes left of this segment, because in two current sitcoms that I was just kind of trying to see if something I could stream, two of them, pornography was mentioned as a joking way. One guy said to another guy, well, why don't you just fall? He was falling asleep to the sound of wild animals or something. And he goes, well, why don't you just fall asleep to porn like the rest of us? And then the other one, where there was a reference to porn too, about, that guy over there who's watching porn on his break. Like, it's nothing. So I want to finish that thought when we get back from the break, but then we're going to get right into this Jesuit priest and Mary as a powerful woman.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, or you can call 573-4BREAD-4, and you can text that number as well. You can also log on to breadboxmedia.com and scroll over to Friend of the Show and scroll down to Dr. Michelle Live, and you can become a friend of the show. So it's kind of a little bit of a Mary ramble today, but it's more of also a women ramble. Closed out the last segment, just interjecting a little bit about how now in the common vernacular and kind of as a little sitcom thing is the idea that porn is just nothing, you know, fall asleep like the rest of us do with porn, or why don't you go do porn on your break rather than try to do a strike or something. It was a sitcom, just kind of like everyone else does, like it's nothing, like it doesn't have a degrading quality to the women that are the stars, but also, or not even stars, a lot of them are human trafficked, or to the women whose men are watching this. How it empowers women, I really don't know, but somehow we've learned to say something that just is, you know, you say things enough times, it starts to sound like it's real. So, you know, how do we counteract this? Well, you know, as soon as we can say something, we can be cut down. We can be faulted. We are instant. Everything I say on the show, probably you could take it apart with a knife and go, wait, that's not right. This isn't good. That's not good. Look, she's this, she's that. I'm telling you my opinions because I'm a woman who lives in 2016 and I have a big drive. And that drive is to be free, to love God, to be what he wants me to be, and for all of you, men and women, girls and boys, to be who God wants you to be. And since I had to spend so much of my life doing great things, good things, strong things, took a lot of drive, lots of education, but there was still that thing, who am I succumbing to? What is hollowed out? What's not right here? That dissonant chord. It is, no one can prevent that for me. No one can prevent it for you. But you have to admit you have it in order to see that maybe you're not as free as you think you are. Maybe your path needs to be broadened, not necessarily changed. So let's go to Mary. So this Jesuit priest, Father Martin, and evidently he's written many books. It really wasn't a stumble, I bet, because as I said, didn't know I was going to talk about that, this until this morning. And then, boom, I just Googled Virgin Mary, a strong woman. And I get this article that was written by a Jesuit priest in 2000. And I think, I don't know, maybe it was 2009. I'm not sure. So, I must have been reprinted because there's a picture here that says shows a statue that was on display in 2014 in Madrid, 2014. So I won't have time to read the entire thing, I don't think. But I love every little point. And I want you to think about this. And we're going to be doing an Advent walk as this time goes on up to Advent, actually, the beginning of Advent. So it's called Hail Mary. You have more in common with the mother of Jesus than you think, by James Martin. It's tough to relate to someone who's supposed to be God's mom, isn't it? Over the past few weeks, millions of Christians, and this was written, I think, on Christmas Eve 2009, have bought, sent, and received cards prominently displaying images of Mary and her son. The most popular designs, if the cards I've received are any indication, come from the late Middle Ages and Renaissance. Typically, Mary, an attractive young woman with light-colored hair, stares beatifically at her newborn son, whose rosy cheeks complement his Virgin Mother's fair complexion. Both sport halos, and in some renderings, Jesus' halo includes a cross, a foreshadowing of his suffering 3 decades hence. Even non-believers know that Mary probably looked nothing like what she does on Hallmark cards. Most likely, she was a young girl around 14 with neither a fair complexion nor fawn-colored hair. While there is a dispute over whether Palestinians today physically resemble the denizens of first-century Palestine, it's fair to say that Miriam of Nazareth looked more like a Middle Eastern girl of today, with darker skin and raven hair, than she did a Northern European Renaissance milkmaid. But if card manufacturers still think of Mary as a fair-skinned beauty queen, many Christians, especially Catholics, don't even think of her as human. Mary exists on a more exalted plane. For Catholics, she's the Blessed Mother, the Blessed Virgin Mary. And according to the Council of Ephesus, which convened in 431 AD, the Mother of God. The dogma-making council reasoned that if Jesus was fully human and fully divine, the two natures inseparable. Mary had to be mother of both, hence the mother of God. Though I believe in all these titles, he's a Jesuit priest, remember, such lofty theological images can obscure Mary's earthy humanity and distance her from us. And remember, we don't want to be distanced from how to be a woman. That's what, remember, they put enmity between me and the woman. We don't want to be distanced from a true woman, the women that God created in all their glory, all their femininity, and all their power. That's me interjecting. Okay, so the human Mary has a lot to teach Christians. Actually, everyone, man and women, from the devout believer to the doubtful seeker to the disbelieving atheist. Just look at her story as recounted in the Gospel of Luke. Even if you doubt that the narrative is told accurately, you have to admit that buried within the supposedly pious and saccharine Bible tale is a vivid image of a strong, resilient, and self-possessed woman. To begin with, the first time Mary opens her mouth in the New Testament, it is to question God. How can this be, since I'm a virgin, she asks, after the angel tells her that she will give birth? A reasonable enough question. Her response to something surprising in her life, and that's quite an understatement, is to question, to doubt. Here's one moment where her entirely human life intersects our own. Who hasn't wanted to ask in the face of a life-altering change, how can this be? Holy confusion is a natural part of the life of any believer. Indeed, any person, ironically, earlier in Luke's gospel, Zechariah, the soon-to-be father of John the Baptist, doesn't fare as well with his question. when he doubts that his elderly wife will conceive a son, a manifestly testy angel strikes him dumb. When Mary airs her confusion, the angel politely furnishes her with an explanation, albeit a confusing one. It's a striking example of biblical favoritism for women. After the angel, this is Father's opinion, after the angel explains what will happen to Mary, Mary makes her decision. So you see that? Mary makes her decision because she could have said, well, no, no, no. She says, yes, let it be done to me according to your will. As a Catholic theologian, Elizabeth Johnson points out in her book, Truly Our Sister, the young peasant girl decides on her own without recourse to the traditional male authorities of her day. Quote, exercising independent thought and action, she asks questions, takes counsel with her own soul, Johnson writes. In a self-determining act of personal autonomy, she decides to go for it. This is one reason why Mary is a central figure for many smart Christian women, like the theologian Diana Hayes, who calls Mary's radical yes a moment of outrageous authority. After the angel's visit or encounter with God in a vision or a dream or however you understand it, Mary rushes off to see Zechariah's wife, her cousin Elizabeth. Pious preachers paint this episode as Mary's journey to a Judean town in a hill country to assist the elderly woman with her upcoming birth. But something else may be going on. The young pregnant Mary probably needed the older woman's advice. Again, another point of intersection. Who hasn't felt the need for counsel in times of severe stress, no matter how faith-filled a person is? Setting aside the miraculous circumstances of the conception, it makes perfect sense that an indignant young mother would seek the assistance, would seek the assistance of a wiser older woman. You know what? I've lost my place and we're almost finished here. Okay, let me scroll. Okay, a Catholic sister in an essay to the new book, Holiness and the Feminine Spirit, points out that Mary does not turn to the men in her life, not to Joseph, her husband, for understanding, nor to her father for protection, nor to the local priest for vindication. No, writes sister, Mary goes to another woman. During the sojourn with her cousin, Mary proclaims what is termed her Magnificat. We're going to stop there. I'm going to put a link up to this article, and I want to come back to this because this is not a feminist crazed moment. This is truth. This is looking at holistically as you want to be looked at. You want to be looked at as the person you are, the mother you are, the young girl that you are, the man that you are. Also, you want to be looked at as a soul you are, as a child of God that you are. All those things are real, not one or the other. So we're going to follow that through this week. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Thank you for walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. Please email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We will see you tomorrow.